This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frostproof Coors Light. And in a moment of spontaneity, we decided to do 5 at 5, right, Jim?
Five questions at 5, yeah.
Five Seahawks questions at 5, and we kick it off with question number one.
Number one.
What are the Seahawks going to do with no Alex Magoo?
That's right. Magoo's gone.
I liked Magoo.
I did, too.
He had a good arm.
We must have liked him more than the Seahawks did, though.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, I think they were kind of... Perhaps this was a situation where he's like, I'd like to see my opportunities elsewhere. And they're like, well, go ahead. Okay.
Well, they drafted him.
Yes. 7th round pick.
So, where did they end up going?
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
So they weren't comfortable enough to make him the backup, being a rookie, 7th round pick. So they got Brett Hundley, who's now, he's a free agent.
That's correct.
So that's an open position. Think they bring Hundley back?
Yeah, I do. I would expect that they bring Brett Hundley back. That depends on what kind of market there is for him, but I think Brett Hundley seems like he's a really good fit here, and I don't see Brett Hundley being a guy that looks to get into a situation that puts him closer to starting. It's an interesting... Being a backup in Seattle is an interesting decision for a quarterback because it's got to be a great job, and you come to a team that's contending. You've also come into a team where the guy never gets hurt.
Well... That could change now that he's in his 30s.
You think he's going to start getting banged up?
Yes, I do. I mean, typically...
He doesn't break, though. He's not built to
break. Well, the odds say that he's going to, at some point, going to miss a game. So that makes it even more important that you need a quality backup.
Look at you listening to the odds.
Well, okay, you tell me. How many seasons has he had? 7?
7.
He's played 16 games all 7 seasons.
He's on pace to never miss a game in his entire career.
The odds
would
tell you.
His track record tells me he's never going to miss a game.
Although, how'd Brady do this year? He didn't miss any, did he?
Nope.
And he's 41.
41 years old.
Maybe Russell will go until he's 41 and play every single game, but at some point. He was sacked 51 times this year.
How worried are you about the loss of Alex Magoo?
I liked him. I would like to have seen... I want to see them develop a guy. I'm kind of fascinated by, like, Nick Mullins down there. And then he replaced a guy who was developed in New England. And not Jacoby Brissett, but Jimmy Garoppolo. And Brissett was another one that came out of the Patriot system that they traded away for something. I can't remember what they traded it for. I think it was a pick. But anyway, that was... I would like to see them be able to do that. I don't understand backup quarterbacks because it just seems like they've kind of relegated themselves to, like, yeah, I'm a backup. I guess I never see, like, and I don't even know how you would show it, but I guess a hungry backup quarterback. I feel like a lot of them, because, you know, you say, oh, it's a great job here. I don't think it's a great job because you're never going to get to play. So it's an interesting mentality with those guys. They have to be, you know, prepared to... You know, and maybe that's a personality profile with Magoo, and maybe that's why they told him, you know. Because I know that a lot of guys, unless you have to, they will stay here instead of, you know, getting claimed by somebody else. I know that if they cut you off the active roster, you have to go.
Correct.
Right.
But, this is his choice to leave.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I admire him for that. Because I feel like he wants to go somewhere where he thinks he has a chance. You know, and look, maybe he doesn't. Maybe they sign, you know, Nick Foles down there or Joe Flacco. But still, at least it's kind of an open job. There's no opening here.
Can the Seahawks get a guy like Taysom Hill? Why hasn't this
That'd
happened
awesome.
More? That guy's awesome. Everything he's able to do, and I guess it's easier said than to go find. But go find a 250-pound guy that plays quarterback in college and throw him out there.
Yeah, he runs the ball. He can throw. We saw that. It was a play that got called back, but he threw like a 30-yard strike to Alvin Kamara. It was a beautiful throw. And then he covers on kicks. He returns kickoffs. I mean, that guy does everything. Yeah, you know what? That's a mentality of, hey, you know what? If you're going to be here in a uniform, we're going to put you to work.
Go look for work. 220 pounds. He's not 250. He's a small linebacker, though.
I sent him out as a receiver in the last game,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Carves weigh 700 pounds, Danny. 250. Is that what you saw when you looked at him?
Nah, I would have guessed 235. I thought he was big.
You think he's big?
Yeah.
How often do they do that a game?
He probably plays 10 offensive snaps a game.
Does he?
Yeah.
Huh.
He runs down on kickoffs. He returns punts. I think the games I've seen him, yeah, probably 5 to 10. And he does all kinds of different things.
Number two.
Will Russell Wilson get $35 million a year?
Yes. Whenever he signs his contract, he's going to get $35 million a year. I'm just not sure when it's going to be. But yes, he's going to get $35 million a year.
I don't see why they would not. Is that the... I like the way you put it, and that's how I would put it if I was the GM. You're not going to get a record-breaking deal here. The only thing that the agent would come back with would be, yeah, but you know what? In 3 or 4 or 5 years, this is going to be really cheap. So, I mean, you know, that's what... I think it's going to be kind of miserable going back and forth with Mark Rogers. Not because, you know, I think he's a tough... I think he's tough to deal with, and but like I said, that's a compliment to him, right? I mean, he's representing his guy, Russell Wilson. He also doesn't have a whole lot of experience NFL versus Major League Baseball, and I think for that reason, he might sometimes go over the top a little bit. That's just kind of my read, but yeah, he's going to get paid that, and you're just going to have to suck it up and go, you know what? I hope, just like with Tyler Lockett, that that looks cheap in 2 or 3 years.
I think you're right. I'm with you guys. I think he's going to get $35 million. And you look at right now, Aaron Rodgers has the top annual salary at $33.5 million. And then Matt Ryan has the top guarantee so far at $100 million. So you look at Russell Wilson, he's going to exceed both of those. So he's going to have a higher guarantee. He's going to have a higher annual contract than Aaron Rodgers. And, boy, give him the moon. I mean, he's that important to this franchise, and it's not for what he's done, but what you can expect similar type numbers, maybe even better from Russell Wilson in the future.
Number three.
What happened to Nas Jones this year?
This is a mystery. This is a whodunit. He's moving, we know this, he's moving from defensive tackle to defensive end, which would lead me to believe that they didn't think he was strong enough or big enough to play inside, or they think he's more suited to playing on the edge. It was a mystery because I've always thought Nas had a great attitude. It didn't make sense. That was a situation that didn't add up. And the times he did play, I thought he made plays.
Maybe he got caught in between. You know, watching this new guy, Jamie Meter, you know, I wonder if they're trying to get more like, okay, you're either an inside guy or an outside guy, and he's kind of a tweener. And then also, you know, I thought the injury thing with him, he came back looking like he was in great shape. And so, yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I don't think, I mean, having talked to Nas Jones, he's not a problem child, that's for sure. As a matter of fact, he's quite the opposite. So I don't see that it was anything that was like disciplinary or anything like that. I just think he's one of those guys that's kind of caught in between. So they'll probably have him, slimmed down maybe 10 pounds or something like that. I don't know, maybe not. But if he works hard and turns it all into muscle like Jaron Reed did, then, you know, maybe he can stay the same weight. And hopefully, you know, this is one of the guys he talked about at the end of the year going into the offseason. He talked about Nas Jones, and we know his character is the best. You know, it overcame the regional pain syndrome thing that he had and has come a long ways, got a great attitude. So I'm always rooting for him. He also wears the best number in all of football.
92.
Number 92.
You guys have a little camaraderie, common karate there.
Yeah.
Kind of strange, though, wasn't it this year? Only 7 tackles all year. And then when he was a healthy scratch, and yeah. Pete Carroll always said, well, it's matchups. And you kind of went, well, okay, whatever, coach. So we'll see. I'm hopeful, though. I'm hopeful with the change there. Maybe they already have a guy that's a pass rusher. Maybe Nas Jones will be that guy that can help out Jaron Reed and Frank Clark. But they're down to 3 defensive tackles. Well, they added meters. So you got Puna Ford, and you got Reed, and you got Quentin Jefferson, and so they'll need some more bodies there.
We're so used to seeing guys when they start developing and taking steps forward with the Seahawks that they usually just take off like a rocket. And you felt that way with Nas last year. In his rookie season, he got hurt at the end of it. He suffered a high ankle sprain. You felt that was a huge bummer, and it hurt him down the stretch because he'd been a really effective. Got an interception. He intercepted Aaron Rodgers on his first play from scrimmage, the first play he was in the game. It's strange when a guy doesn't take that next step. To be fair, it happens a lot of times, and for any number of reasons. It doesn't mean that he won't take another step forward next year. But that was, if you're going to ask me the biggest the biggest sort of surprise or the thing that I was not expecting to happen in a negative way, it was that Naj Jones wouldn't be much of a factor in his second year. I thought he was closer to being a guy that would crack in and have the kind of season that Jaren Reed had.
Everybody's on a different path, though, right? And so we'll see. Hopefully it turns around for him next year. We certainly love his voice, too.
Yeah, he's got a great voice.
Number four.
At what position do the Seahawks need the most bodies?
It's like Die Hard. We're going to need some more guys. Where do they need to load up? Where do we need some more personnel, some more people?
I'll say keep going on the D-line. You know, we talked about pass rusher, and then, you know, they added this meter guy. I don't want to say he's a one-trick pony because I haven't seen him play enough, but he is a big run-stuffing guy that, you know, probably not going to get much rush. I guess we're assuming that Shamar Stephens out the door?
I'm not sure about that. He was out on the open market this year, and they got him for a one-year deal. I could see him coming back.
Yeah, I could too. So, I mean, and if that was, you know, Puna Ford, and maybe that was why Naj Jones got moved outside. Shamar Stephens, a couple of the plays that he made were, like, eye-popping to me for a D-tackle. I'm not saying it's like, you know, lightning speed, but for a D-tackle, some of the plays he made I thought were surprising. And I want to say we had his contract numbers around $2 million, something like that, 1.5 to 2. You know, and it just depends on what he's going to be able to get in the market out there. But yeah, D-line, I just can't have enough pass rushers. The end.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Jamie Meter here and Greg Williams, what he had to say about him, one of the best run defenders in the NFL before the 2018 season. And so he was out this last year, though, but maybe he'll add some needed strength there at defensive tackle when he joins the Seahawks. But I'm going to go with offensive line because I'm a little concerned about perhaps losing Sweezy and Fluker, and hopefully you get both of those guys back. But I'd like to see a little more depth there and just bolster that up and make sure that you get that running game going next year the way it was this year.
I'm going to pick linebackers, Dave. We need some more guys at linebacker. They keep running out. It seems like for 3 years, when I started covering the NFL, linebacker, it wasn't the most. Guys, teams constantly had 6 and 7 linebackers. I feel like the Seahawks, over the past couple years, they've ran short at that position and kind of churned through guys. A couple years ago, they went with a bunch of veterans like Michael Wilhoit, Terrence Garvin, some other guys. And Wilhoit, I didn't think played exceptionally well. I was surprised. I thought he'd be a bigger factor for the Seahawks, to use a Pete Carroll term.
Don't you think Shaquem Griffin's going to take a step next year?
I hope so.
Are you concerned about that?
I hope so. I wonder. I think it was a good sign that he made plays on special teams later in the year. I wonder, Pete generally likes bigger dudes, and he's not a bigger linebacker. What did you think about Shaquem's year, Dave?
I didn't think it was very good at linebacker. But, you know, again, I always say I don't expect much from the rookies, you know, especially a guy like Trey Flowers. That's why I always kind of have the rubber band effect where, like, wow, I can't believe that he was able to play corner so well, you know, as a rookie. It's the hardest position on defense for sure. But, yeah, he wasn't ready, that's for sure. And there's been some disappointment. You're right. Michael Wilhoit was the biggest, I think, disappointment that we've seen as a free agent signing in a while. And it's not like he was horrible or anything. It's just that he was so good at San Francisco. And just watching him play, like, he did everything right. He was a playmaker. He could rush the passer. He didn't really see any of that. And he got an interception off of a tip pass, I think. But, yeah, so... Yeah, maybe, but the thing is, everybody's, you know, spending so much time with one tight end and one running back on the field, you usually don't have three linebackers out there. You got two, and you got KJ and Bobby. So, you know, we'll see who else they're able to develop. I like Kalitro. I think Kalitro's a really good backup linebacker, but
yeah.
I don't know that he's going to, we'll see, but I don't know that he's going to become that guy that where he never really showed, a flash where it's like, oh, man, that guy can be a starter someday.
Yeah. Kalitro, give me Kalitro. Bring back the Wolf of Wall Street.
He's really good.
Get Michael Kendricks back with the Seahawks. And then add two or three guys in the draft, undrafted free agent rookies. You need some special teams. That's where you get your special teams depth, too.
You see, and I think that's another thing. That I see too many receivers and defensive backs running down on kickoffs. You know, to me, you got to have linebackers in there. So... It's kind of ironic, though, because one of the times I saw a guy get out of his lane, it was a linebacker when there was a touchdown run, a kickoff for a touchdown. But Yeah, typically, I mean, your linebackers are the core of your special teams, but times are changing, and, you know, I don't know that the linebacker position is going to go away, but, yeah, it's kind of weird how you don't see what, five guys sometimes? That's about it.
I'm with you on Kendricks, but we shall see. His sentencing is next Thursday, and we'll find out whether he's going to be available or not. But I would think the Seahawks would favor him over KJ, plus KJ wants to go out and test the market. I'm not sure how that's going to work out, Danny, but we'll find out next Thursday. Dave, what about Barkevious Mingo? Did he have a good year, and you think that maybe even better things to come for him?
I did. Yeah, I thought he was really good. He was great on special teams. And then, you know, he was sound as a linebacker. And even as his pass drops, there was one time where I'm like, that's not right. But, you know, for the most part, I thought he did a good job developing there, and especially considering the fact that it was night and day from where he came from. He came from Cleveland where he was hand in the dirt, and now he's up on 2 feet. He's evolved as a football player.
It's taken a step.
From D lineman to linebacker to, I guess, DB. But anyway, yeah, I thought he was great and a great signing. And I have to say, another rubber band effect, because I didn't expect much out of him. I thought, this guy, you know, we'll see. Plus, he couldn't be a better person. I just love talking to him. Mm-hmm. He's one of our favorite interviews. He's great.
Number five.
Of the Seahawks' recent draft picks in the secondary, who's most likely to make the Pro Bowl first?
So these are Delano Hill, Tedrick Thompson, Trey Flowers, Shaquille Griffin. Who do you think's got Pro Bowl?
We're all going to have the same answer, aren't we?
I don't know.
I think we will.
You're going to say Trey Flowers?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm tempted to say that, but I'm going to go with Bradley McDougal. I think Bradley is... There was a lot of times where he was banged up. I like all the different things that Bradley can do. He's a great open field tackler. He's a playmaker, and he could have had 3 picks last year. He had 3 in that one Denver game. He got 2 in that one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Earl got 1. Yeah, and he dropped another one, but... I like Bradley. I think he's going to be probably the first one to be a Pro Bowler.
What do you think they want to do back there? Do you think they prefer to have McDougal and Hill back there and Thompson being the odd guy out?
I don't know, man. The way Pete talked about Delano Hill, Rafel and I used to complain about Delano in the beginning of the year. It was like, you know, it seems like he's always in just a little bit off and in the wrong position. And then all of a sudden, as the... I probably shouldn't have thrown Rabel's name in there, too. But anyway, and then as the year went on, he got better and better, and I thought he was in the right spot. And, you know, I just haven't really seen as much out of him as far as upside goes. I haven't seen as much out of Delano Hill upside as I have from Tedrick Thompson.
Tedrick's a hitter.
He is a pure hitter. You might say he's a trained killer. And I love the way he hits, and he's not that big. And he is able to come up and just... You know, and I think that there's an element of that that's needed. Right before the Seahawks' opponent quarterback rating kind of went down, up to that point, they had a streak of time there where they were knocking receivers around. They had, what, 2 concussions that they gave against the Raiders
against
in London?
And
then there was one against
the Rams.
Because
Cooper Kupp and Brandon Cooks both left that game.
So, you know, and I'm hoping that the league goes that way where, you know, they're going to stop calling those penalties. But, you know, I think Tedrick Thompson probably has the most upside.
Is that where the defense needs to get better? If you look at how to improve it, they had more sacks. So you'd set the line at, what, 39 sacks, and they got above that. They got more pass rush than they usually get. Is the improvement need to come from the secondary?
Yeah, I mean, those guys need to gradually get better. But as far as the biggest problem on defense, I think it's, you brought it up yesterday, Jim, the run. You know, so they went and got this run stuffer in Meter. And then, you know, hopefully they'll figure out some of the things that went wrong as far as getting gashed run-wise. It's not like they got blown off the ball a lot because Jaron Reed's a fighter inside there. He's not ever going to get beat up, but... It just seemed like that they weren't playing together and guys were sometimes taking chances. But it wasn't as bad as the year before, that's for sure. But if I was going to, you know, try to fix one thing, I think it would be the run defense.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I'm just looking at the Seahawks were the third worst at allowing explosive pass plays this year. So that's secondary. And then all the other stats, they're middle of the road at best this year. And, Danny, you thought it was even a below-average defense. And it was okay, but I'd go with Trey Flowers as being the first guy we're going to see in the Pro Bowl. I like this idea. Someone texted it in the Coors Light text line, and I agree with it. I wouldn't mind seeing Trey Flowers go over, switch sides of the field, and put Shaquille Griffin back over on the right side. Seemed he had more success there his rookie season than he did this year. I don't follow, you know, exactly how a guy is covering and his coverage skills and the drop step and all that stuff they're doing. But from everything I heard, and it seemed like Shaquille Griffin had a bad year or below average year. They were expecting more things from him on the switch, or they wouldn't have switched him over there. I say just switch him back and send Trey Flowers over there. Boy, he was impressive being a safety in college and then picking it up right away. So get Flowers over on that side of the field and send Griffin back on the right side.
This hour, Danny, Dave, and more is brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. Those were our five questions at 5 o'clock. Frank Clark has sent out a series of tweets, which are interesting in the... he shed some light on some of the injuries he played through. I think we all saw him get banged up in the game against Minnesota, the Monday night game. And he said, this is... Frank said, this was 23 minutes ago, I played the whole season at 60%. Trust me, I hit it well. Two torn UCLs in one season, both against the Minnesota Vikings. I didn't have any elbows, man. If you all only knew. So he had that kind of season with two damaged elbows, which is pretty incredible to think about. It is a little strange to reveal the nature of your injuries, but that generally, I would always talk about at the end of a season, you would always hear the explanations of everybody would start to explain all of the different things that they had played through. You talk to them during the regular season, they're like, oh yeah, it's fine. I'm going to be able to go. At the end of it, you're like, yeah, basically it was duct tape that was holding my shoulder joint in place and was getting me, allowing me to get out on the field. No UCLs.
Ulnar collateral ligaments.
It's Tommy John ligament.
Yeah.
Is that what most people will know it by?
Well, I think that's a good thing to say if you are going into a contract year. I mean, you're like, hey, look, I did it with no elbows. But, you know, I doubt that he's fibbing there. I mean, I'm sure he's telling the truth. And that's the thing. You do have to go through that. So, yeah, I mean, Frank's a warrior, man. You can tell he's one of those guys I feel like gets by on adrenaline a lot. When he gets out there on the field, you know, and that's it. Talk about when you're banged up during the week and you're not practicing, then, you know, once the game starts, then your adrenaline takes over. And Frank's definitely pure adrenaline guy. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome to hear. Is it, are we having surgery?
I don't know. That's kind of what my next question was. Do you need UCLs to rush the passer? It would seem to be a pretty important part of the body.
He got 13 sacks.
I know, but that. Like, it's not extraneous. This is not like the appendix. This is not some sort of organ that you don't really need that you've evolved beyond. It would seem to be that, does he need to go get stuff fixed? I feel like I should call Frank and ask him.
I think we should wait and hear from a medical doctor.
I don't know. It's much more fun to diagnose this over
just
Twitter.
Just off a tweeter?
Yeah, let him know.
So is this, what do you think about him doing this? These revealing publicly that he played the whole season at 60%, is that?
Well, I think it should frighten the rest of the NFL. I think jaws across the league just dropped, and they're like, oh, my God, wait until he's fully operational. He will wreak havoc. We'll keep this conversation going and also revisit how the Seahawks solved their problem at kicker. That's next on Danny, Dave, and More.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and More, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Elbows? Who needs elbows? Not Frank Clark. He doesn't need his elbows. He's informing us via Twitter, this is about a half hour ago, that he played this whole season at 60%, tore both his UCLs in the Minnesota Monday night game, which was fairly late in the season.
He tore them in the same game?
That's what he said.
Well, tear, you know, I guess, you know, when you irritate it,
That's a good point, Dave.
A partial tear.
You're
right?
Correct.
Like, you know, when I had tennis elbow recently, because I was scooping dog poop in the backyard with one hand.
That was probably a slight tear.
Yeah, I had a tear. I had no UCLs. Can you believe I scooped all that poop, Jim, without a UCL?
20 pounds worth?
Yeah, I picked up about 20, 25 pounds of poop this last weekend.
That's solid. Wow. Hoover went to work. He's an industrious fella.
He's a three-time-a-day dog.
Really?
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Can I make a suggestion? Maybe you should go out there more often so it wouldn't be as bad.
You know what? I'd like to make a suggestion. Maybe somebody else could do it instead of me. I'm the only one who's ever scooped poop in the family.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you feel put upon in that regard?
I do. I do. But, yeah, I think Frank's probably just being a little bit dramatic. But, you know, okay, it's dramatic maybe for a football player. But for, like, the normal person, a lot of people would be, like, going to therapy and, oh, I can't pick up a tennis racket with the things that Frank has. I guarantee you. It's, you know, look, that's something that you just have to deal with year in and year out. I remember one time at the end of the year, Joe Nash had, well, first of all, he had kidney stones. So sometimes you have to put like a catheter up there when you have kidney stones if they're really bad.
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. They
so,
did that in Deadwood. It
so
was
he,
awful.
He came out of the shower and he had had surgery on both of his elbows and then he had that going on.
Ugh.
And it was after the last game and we were all getting ready to go home and I'm like, Joe, dude, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I've needed surgery on my elbows all year. And, you know, and I never knew about it other than he wore sleeves. I mean, Joe Nash was a tough dude and a really good player, by the way. One of the best nose guards I ever played behind. But, yeah, that's kind of the part of the deal. And, you know, the thing is about it is I worry that guys aren't that way anymore, that they're like, hey, no, I got a future, man. I'm not going to go out there if I think I'm going to tear something. But I'm hearing more and more from inside, you know, that these are the kind of old school guys that will go out and, you know, can I get an injection for this so I can play? Not, I'm not 100%, so I'm not going to go.
So he said that. Frank Clark's let us know. And look, it's a good sign of his ability to persevere and play through pain. It probably, you're right, when it's a tear, it doesn't mean it's severed. It doesn't mean he's going to have two Tommy John surgeries.
Yeah.
But he played through some serious discomfort. I'm going to apologize to Jessamine in advance for this because I'm going to rewind to the dog poop.
Oh, I thought you were going to do her gangster talk.
Oh, no. No.
Stole that from Jess.
Coppers! We're going to be moving back.
Got a pile of poop in the yard, do you?
Ray Allen, when he was with the Sonics, he scored 43 points in a game against the Kings, and it's one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. As he included him hitting a turnaround, fall-away three-pointer with less than a minute to go. And then the next day we were talking to him about it, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I got home that night after that game, though, and I had to go out to the garage where my dog had crapped everywhere. And he was like, and I thought to myself, like, can you believe that? Like, I scored 43 points in a playoff game tonight, and I have to come out and do this. Afterwards, I was like, Ray, like, who else did you want to do it? It was your dog. Like, did you think because you scored 43 points in a playoff game, you should be exempt? And like, oh, Ray, you scored 43 points. We'll take care of your dog. If it's your dog, you clean up your dog's poop.
But I see it as him saying it like that really brought me back down to earth afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm just like you guys. I got to go.
Yeah.
Scoop up poop.
Yeah. See, I saw it as I scored 43 points and now I'm being brought back like I'm just a regular Joe off the street and having to deal with the mundane day-to-day realities.
Did you feel like that maybe you should have gone over and scooped the poop for
him? I definitely
did not. You did score 43 points in a playoff game, Danny.
I did feel like telling him, though, like, Ray, raising my, you've got a Ferrari with a window so you can see the engine. I don't want to hear you complain about the day-to-day. Yes.
Where was the window?
It was like on the back. Like through the where the window was it was a 2-seat car and there was a window right there behind it.
And it was in the back?
Yes.
Okay.
That you could look through and see it.
Why?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Why, Ray?
That's why I wanted to say, like, I don't want to hear
complaining about the dog poop
you had to clean up out of the garage that was there. But Ray was fantastic. He laughed about it.
I always think about the $100 I lost to him whenever Ray Allen's name comes up.
Well, that's because you're an idiot.
Yeah, $100. And I was thinking, man, you make millions of dollars. Could you just, even though I made that bet and I lost, is there any way I can keep this one? I mean, I wouldn't have kept it, but he...
Tell everybody what the bet is.
It was just down Lake Tahoe, and he was in that celebrity tournament. I bet that he wouldn't birdie the 18th hole when he was in the pro-am part of the tournament. And lo and behold, he birdied out of the bunker. He drained like a 20-foot putt and took $100 from me.
So since Ray Allen is rich, he should not have taken your money from you betting against him.
Yeah, that's kind of
really?
What I was hoping for.
Oh, that doesn't sound like you, Jim.
No, I was going to.
Why do you have so many bets
with
athletes?
Here's the thing. I would have insisted if he had said, hey, Jim, just keep it, you know. But he did tell me, he goes, don't ever bet against me again. And I never have. But, yeah, I would have insisted because I'm with you guys on that. It doesn't matter. Like you go out to dinner or something. If somebody makes more money than you do, that doesn't mean that they should pick up a bigger percentage of the bill. So,
but apparently, if somebody makes more money than you do, they should let you off the hook for the bet that you make with them.
If I'd been him, I might have said, "Hey, Jim, you know what the heck here."
But you're not him.
Yeah, I know.
And you wouldn't have bet you.
Yeah, and I would have insisted that he.
I'd like to go back to this for just a second. You would have insisted on paying, but you slightly think he should have put up more resistance than he did to Eubank.
Yes. You would have liked to at least him saying, no, that's okay.
Yeah.
I can't.
Essentially.
Okay. And then it would have been okay?
He took it really fast. It's like he didn't have $100.
Well, you
said, don't ever bet against me.
Yeah, he hearts haters. It's like you doubted me there.
I love the guy, though. He was so great to deal with, and I didn't deal with him that much, but I love watching him play.
Can I ask you guys a question right now? Do you know where this whole conversation started?
Dog poop.
Frank Clark's UCLs.
That's true, with the elbows.
Yeah, but then we had Flapper Girl from inside the...
What are you talking about?
I could listen to that all day long.
Yeah, me too.
Usually you guys have problems.
Usually you think those things are kind of stupid.
No, I like that.
Yeah, this one, it's hilarious. It's like also the Beverly Hillbillies with C. Raj and Danny. I can't... And you too.
Hey, Phil!
Yeah, I can't get enough of that. Anyway, Frank Clark's UCLs, dog pooping, Ray Allen... Welched bets. I think, you know, Frank is a tough guy, and I just think it adds to why you would want to sign him. But, you know, I'm with you, Danny. I think it's probably prudent to say, yeah, and he's not going to be mad about getting.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't think so. Anytime somebody offers to pay you, and I think I said 14 and a half because that's what I read somewhere, but I think it was a couple years old. I think it's like 16 or 17.
They haven't set the exact price yet. DeMarcus Lawrence played on the deal that Frank would get this past year.
Yeah.
And I believe it was like $17.4 million dollars that he would get under the tag. The other thing is that you won't know. There's no chance that they get a deal done right now, even if they're talking in earnest, as Pete said, because the deal only happens at a deadline. Like if a deal's going to get done at this point, it's almost certainly going to get done in the lead up to the deadline for the franchise tag to go on, because that would mean that you push it to that point of saying, hey, either you take the deal or we're going to apply the tag, and then you get to that. That would be the next decision point that would be there. I can't imagine a scenario where they don't agree and Seattle doesn't place the tag on him, because that would allow him to become an unrestricted free agent. I don't see that happening. After he signs the tag, the next thing will be is that there's a deadline that comes up, and it's in the summer, where if you don't agree by a certain date, there's no long-term deal. And then it'll be a question. The downside for Seattle in a franchise tag, well, there's two downsides. The first is that he's not obligated to show up to anything in the offseason. And he didn't do most of the offseason training this past year, and he wouldn't be obligated to do any of it. And if he doesn't show up for training camp, you have no recourse. You can't fine him because he's not under contract.
So when you franchise a guy, he doesn't have to be at training camp?
That's correct, because he's technically not under contract. When you place the tag on him, you're restricting his free agency.
You don't mean training camp, do you?
Yeah.
You mean OTA?
No, both. Training camp, like when training camp would open.
Well, typically, how does it work with franchise players? I mean, do they typically show up anyway, though?
Increasingly, they show up. They don't always. Le'Veon Bell didn't play at all this past year under a franchise tag. I don't think that would be the scenario with Frank, because it hasn't happened before. He very well might show up at the start of training camp, but that would be his decision. The only point where he would start missing money is if he started missing game checks. Once you miss games, then you're not getting paid whatever the prorated. I believe it's the regular season. I believe it's the regular season when you start losing those checks. We'll keep this conversation going and also explain one guy that might be on the market that I certainly hope the Seahawks don't go inquiring about. The 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light here on Danny, Dave, and Moore.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
This hour, Danny, Dave, and Moore. It's brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. The Seahawks did make an addition today. Jamie Meter, who is someone who was hired, what was he? He was the king of pierogies. The pierogi king of Peoria? No. It's
That's not
chain.
The proper alliteration. Pierogi Prince of Parma.
Pierogi Prince of Parma, man
Parma
from Ohio.
Heights. He hails from Parma Heights, which is Cuyahoga County in Ohio.
Cuyahoga.
And you got the name, excuse me, Pierogi King?
Yes. Pierogi Prince.
From eating him or what?
Must be a fan of the pierogi that's there. He's signed. He's going to be a defensive tackle for them. He had most recently played. He didn't play anywhere this past season. He'd suffered a season-ending injury with the Browns back in 2017. Didn't make a roster this year, but a guy that's going to be come in and brought in to be a run stuffer for the Seattle Seahawks.
He's good at it. He's really good at it. Just from what I saw, I probably watched 50 plays that he had. And He reminds me a lot of Greg Gaines, who is on the D-line for University of Washington. Just really sound. He's got this stance where he gets down in a four-point stance, and he can two-gap, which means you can control a guy on either side, which you don't see a lot of. And, he's a big physical dude. But, Jim, you mentioned it yesterday, and we talked about earlier that the run defense needs to get shored up a little bit. I just think, I think one of the things that's going on in the compared to when I played, that it was much more of a smash mouth type of deal. I think linebackers now are trying to be finesse inside, and you don't see them take on blockers and even receivers. Like, I saw a couple linebackers this year where those little tiny, like Robert Woods and those little receivers that come out, and they just kind of catch them, and then they hold them, and then just kind of. Why wouldn't you, if you saw a receiver coming out to block you, why wouldn't you just run at him and just smash him and just knock him on his butt? I don't see a lot of that in
run
defense.
Are they being coached to do that?
I have no idea.
Are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, it's recommended, Danny. A linebacker said that to me one time. That was Jeff Mills in Denver, and he was supposed to be the really super athletic guy that was going to – and when they signed me in Denver, I don't think they wanted to pay me that – that salary. They wanted to maybe cut me and have this guy start, and he was the most uninstinctive linebacker I'd ever seen. And so, yeah, there was a linebacker from San Francisco. We're watching film. He smashes the guard and just drops him. He's like, hey, are we allowed to do that? I'm like, yeah, you're allowed. It's recommended. So anyway, that's not what – I don't see a lot of that now, and maybe that's by design. I don't know if that's what they're coaching them or what, but I just – to me, the one lost art as far as linebacker play is taking on blocks, and I just don't see a lot of, coming up and just smashing the guy. And, we used to play in a 4-3. So, I would line up over the guard, and it was probably 4 yards depth. And whenever there was a straight ahead running play, I figured it's a race to see who can close the distance and get, on the other side. So, if it's 2 yards is the middle point, I want to hit him at 1.5 or 1, And so you just don't see a lot of that now. And guys are trying to finesse. They're trying to go around. A lot of times they'll kind of catch the guy and back up and go around him. And, I'm not sure exactly what's being coached. And
it's not on short yardage plays.
Well, short yardage is a little bit different. Yeah. But still, yeah, I just don't see guys like running through a gap or, sometimes they'll run through an empty gap, but a lot of times it's you just want to go up and hit that guard as much, as hard as you can and just stuff him. And a lot of times, we see linebackers trying to go around those kinds of blocks and stuff. And look, you can't argue with Bobby and KJ. I mean, those two guys have 1,100 tackles, 1,150 tackles together since they've been here. And, maybe it's a smarter way to do it, but that's one thing I think that could be implemented a little bit in there, if you ask me. I feel like there needs to be more of a smash mouth at the line of scrimmage type of defense.
This would certainly be a step in that direction. Getting a guy who you advertise as a run stuffer.
He's a bar brawler.
Yeah, somebody that you're going to plug in there and let's create some havoc in there. And that was probably, of all the different things on their defense, that was probably the thing that bothered Pete Carroll the most, was the rush yards that they allowed. That they were a team, and it came out in the Dallas game that they weren't able to control Dallas's run game. Right up, maybe the most impactful play that the Seahawks defense gave up was the third and one run where Ezekiel Elliott bounces it outside, and that's not going to be something that Jamie Meter is going to prevent. But just that general idea of being able to control the field in short yardage situations and stop the run.
Yeah, well, I'm just looking at those numbers, and that, again, and we've talked about it a lot, but I know a pass rush that you want to get some help for Reed and Clark, but I just want to see that number come down. They averaged 5 yards against per carry the opponents this year, and so, and it's un-Seahawk-like. It's un-Pete Carroll-like, and I'm sure that they're going to get it straightened out this next year.
I would say that one player that I don't want to hear the Seahawks connected with, and John talked about this today, that Antonio Brown, there's no trade market for Antonio Brown right now. There's no possibility of a trade. That's going to be something that you're going to hear about more in late February. I don't want to hear the Seahawks anywhere near that conversation, though. And it's not just that I think Antonio Brown, there's probably some chemistry concerns. And if the guy wasn't happy catching more than 100 passes in Pittsburgh, how's he going to feel in this offense? The other part is that I just don't want to see them add big-time receivers. Really, I want all of the... I want the majority of any big budget acquisitions. I want it to be guys on the defensive side of the ball. I want them if they're gonna try
even
and
in
sign,
light of what's going on with all yes. the offensive fireworks.
Yeah, almost more in light of what's going on with all the offensive fireworks. If that's what everybody's going to chase, get better on defense. If let everybody else chase through and find the next Sean McVay and find the next guy that's going to be able to run the fly sweep. Seattle, when Seattle's made missteps and they have not made many of them. I feel like Percy Harvin and Jimmy Graham were two ones, and Harvin the bigger miss than Graham. But I felt like it's been with those kind of players. I'd rather see him add that. Instead of adding another guy that they think is a great playmaker, add some more defensive players. Add some more potential star power there.
I can't believe that people are chasing that and that they're going to fall for that. I really don't. Defense always works, always. And they'll catch up to these high-powered offenses. So, yeah, it's amazing to me. Antonio Brown, see, now this is where a guy like Doug should go here. And I would be happy for Doug. I want to see him a Seahawk, obviously. But Antonio Brown has gotten targeted over 100 times every year, except for his rookie year. And he's got catches in triple digits in 7 of his 8 or 9 years in the league. And you look at the number of times he went over 1,000, 7. I mean, he's unbelievable, but I would not touch him with a 10-foot pole. There's no way. You just got rid of those kinds of guys. You know, it's time to have a bunch of young kids with a good attitude and, you know, and look, you got Tyler Lockett. That guy's going to be a leader going forward. And, you know, what his attitude is. And this guy, you know, I just, Antonio Brown, there's a lot of drama there. You do not need that.
This hour, Danny Davenport, is brought to you by Venue Kings. There's just one thing left to do. Well, actually a couple, but we're going to find out everything we learned. That's coming up next.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we learned, brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Guys, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Jess.
Hope you stayed warm out there.
Yeah, a little chilly.
Was it?
Yeah, a little bit. Mm. It's been nice to have this bright, like, January sun is like unprecedented.
I'd take it, the cold with the sun any day of the week.
Heck yeah.
It's been great.
Mm-hmm. Well, today we learned some stuff, starting off by learning a little bit about Dave Wyman's agent.
He was one of those guys that I think would fill you full of holes and you wouldn't know that you were bleeding until he walked away. You know, and he did it the right way where Marvin always got me more money than I thought I deserved. I'll say that much. And you don't hear many players say that. I remember when Flores, when I went to Denver, he's like, oh, that's a lot of money for David. He's like, thanks, Tom. I think so, too.
Dude, but is that what you were you being complimented? Or
no,
were you not sure?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but he was right.
How'd you find him as your agent?
I got him from Jack Elway because he was Elway's agent. He pulled off the whole. You ever see the Elway to Marino 30 for 30? Marvin figures prominently in that, and he does like an interview about it and how he got John to, because he got drafted by the Colts and he didn't want to play for Frank Cush, so he decided to go play, you know, with the Yankees, and then they end up pulling off a trade. So I used to know who the guys they got for Elway were, and I can't remember. But anyway.
I forgot that Frank Cush was in the NFL.
Yeah. So, yeah, Jack Elway got me, Marvin. You know, I was going to say, I mentioned Tom Flores there. Tom Flores is the only head coach that at the end I didn't have some kind of a like gripe with.
Really?
Chuck, I did, because he didn't start me, and you're supposed to not lose your job to injury. And, you know, I got hurt, and then I came back, and I didn't get my job back. So at the end of the year, it was my last year, we were kind of like at odds. We're fine. Of course, he passed away, but, you know, it wasn't like a big. And then Wade Phillips and I had a little headbutting thing at the end. And then, of course, you guys know how I feel about Fire Marshal Bill. But after the 92 season, Tom Flores, I just thought he was the best and classy guy. And, you know, even though he did say that was a lot of money for me, I was like, yeah, he was right. And he was always nice about it.
I got a beef with Flores.
You do?
Yeah.
What is it?
He was good friends with my first boss, a guy named George Camion, who was a jerk.
He was friends with a jerk?
Yeah. He used to give Camion tickets. Camion, anybody that can like Frank Camion,
yeah.
I have suspicions about.
I hope nobody ever thinks that about me. You were friends with Danny O'Neill?
It's very possible that that will happen.
Obnoxious what made Frank, by association.
What yeah. made Frank such a bad guy?
He was mean. He got really mad at me one time because I wasn't going to work Christmas Eve. I was like 16 years old working as a stock boy at a pharmacy, and he wanted me to come in and stock shelves on Christmas Eve. And I was like, no. No, not going to do it.
For some reason, I thought you were already in the professional atmosphere at this point.
No, I was sophomore and junior in high school at Aptos
High. Who do you think you are?
Well, I was being told by my parents I had to go to Christmas Eve Mass. It's not like I wanted to go to Mass. And he yelled at me about it. Jerk.
Yeah, that qualifies.
You got to go to work, see?
Yeah. Got to go to work. Got to go to Mass.
Shelves ain't going to stock themselves.
You old Scrooge, let me go to church.
We also learned today about differing perceptions of Cody Parkey.
Oh, he missed seven field goal attempts, and he missed three extra points.
Oh, okay.
Wasn't that the most in the NFL?
Most of any person in the NFL.
Yeah, and then he went on and yucked it up with the Today people.
He did not yuck it up.
Yes,
they
he
yucked
did.
It up toward him.
I don't want to rekindle this argument, but I went back and watched the video. It was just as bad as the audio.
Well, I didn't watch a video.
It's not funny, Cody.
I meant to.
It's not funny.
I meant to, and then I was on a hike.
You were way late.
Yeah.
You were way late.
I forgot. I told myself when I went home last night that I was going to watch that video.
I know. I didn't remember to watch it until today, but Cody Parkey, he was way too jovial during that whole thing.
He looked nervous. Mm. He looked like a 25-year-old who was nervous on national television.
He had his cute little wife there supporting him. You know, that was nice, but I just think, do you think he went on at the behest of the team?
No.
See, that's the thing. You know, he went outside of the PR department with Chicago because they wouldn't have wanted him to do that. They would have advised him to not do that.
Instead, he was like, I'm going to go show everybody how well I'm getting over this.
Yeah, and even though it's only like 3 days old.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. Yeah, how about you let it simmer, son? Let it set for a while, and then we'll see how you feel.
Finally, today we learned that Wyman has a Deion Sanders story.
I'll tell you my Deion Sanders story.
No.
He picked off Dave Craig. So I was standing down on the, kind of like we were talking about the kickoff the other day, and I don't know if he picked it off or somebody else picked it off and lateraled it to him, and then he had another interception. But he went running past me. You ever see like a deer, like when it's in full flight? And we'll just hop like easily over a 6-foot fence. That's what it looked like when he went running past me. And then by the time he got to where I was down on like the opposing 30. He had the hand behind the head, you know, doing the little dance thing, and he was still flying. And then I look behind him, and there's Dave Craig actually trying to catch him. I'm like, Dave, stop, give up. You know how I told you that I still picture that like Dave's cleats were just tearing up the turf. Like he was stomping, you know, and like you're a little kid and you tell your mom, watch how fast I can run. And you run really hard, like you stomp the ground really hard and, you know, move your, that's what Dave looked like. And then Deion was just like, boing, boing, boing. He's just gone.
Fastest player you ever saw?
That was the fastest I've ever seen a human being move, was Deion right there.
Was it just graceful?
It was one of those things where like I'm a professional football player, right? And I sit there and I go, oh, my God, look at that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was freaky.
Watching Nate Robinson play high school football was one of the most unbelievable things that I'd done. And it's probably because he separated. It's high school and he stood out so much. But he's this little tiny guy, and watching how explosive he was when he moved, it's just jaw-dropping. It's one of the really cool things about sports when you see something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, had a great basketball career, but
Nate?
He was a heck of a football player.
Oh, I would have loved to see Nate in the NFL. What's the fastest you've ever seen somebody move?
Oh, man, we talked about, well, I mean, just on TV, Bob Hayes with Dallas, and then Willie Gault talking about him yesterday.
Yeah.
In person.
I thought I was going to say Jim going for his tequila and Gatorade. It's the fastest.
Yeah, I miss it. I'm 2 weeks into it.
Yeah?
2 weeks without a cocktail and...
You feel responsible? Do you feel...
It's boring.
It is boring.
Yes, it is.
Boring.
That's correct.
It's just really boring.
Take it from me. 17 months later, you're going to feel it's really boring.
What, am I supposed to just go home and go to bed?
Yeah. It's not any
really?
Fun. No fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get crazy and have a Trader Joe's 70% cocoa chocolate bar. If I really want to get nuts.
Danny.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It sucks.
It does. It does. But you feel better when you lose weight. Healthier.
Keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. I do.
Danny, you were a rotund little thing.
Yeah.
I look back at some of those pictures from, and you, I didn't see it at the time.
No.
And you see his face?
Yeah.
It's like,
it's a porker.
Can you look 10 years younger?
Porker.
How many pounds did you lose? Can you say that now?
Nope.
Why?
Because I don't want to.
It's none of your business.
That's reason enough.
It's none of your business.
Because then it becomes like his thing, like, look at me. Look at how much I did.
And then also it's like, oh, it looks like you're putting some back on. You're like,
I don't want to do it.
It's a mystery.
Yeah. I feel good right now, even though my life's incredibly boring. Okay. So boring, in fact, I'm looking forward to tomorrow at 3 already.
Jim has has a look on his face like the old journalist, like, I have the right to know.
Yeah.
I have the right to know. Who are you to keep that from us?
Those ads for Evolve 180, I'm telling you how much I lose.
I'm not getting paid. Nobody's paying me. I'm not going to share those
Danny
details.
Danny gets paid in splat points at Orange Theory.
That's right. Yeah, I got 31.
That's funny.
Of those.
It's just like when people won't say what their age is, you know.
No, it's not like that at all.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Like,
no.
If you lost 50 pounds, I'd be like, wow.
Yeah, I don't want to have that reaction from anybody.
I would.
Yeah, maybe it's healthier to be that way.
Yeah.
You don't want to go around bragging
about it. No. It's like, I feel like I'm pointing out how bad I was before instead of like how much different things are now. Plus, I just want to frustrate you.
Okay.
Jessamyn McIntyre is our producer. DJ was on the board. You did a great job today for the three of us. We thank you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and More.